Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for tuning in to the October 21 term of SCOTUSCast. I'm your host, Nick Garfinkel, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. On May 16, the court decided Patel v. Garland, a case which concerned federal court review in immigration cases. The judgment of the 11th Circuit below was affirmed, 5-4, in an opinion by Justice Barrett. Justice Gorsuch filed in a dissenting opinion in which Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. Joining today to discuss this decision and its implications is Kelly Holt, associate in the Issue and Appeals Practice at Jones Day.
In this case, the court considered the meaning of 8 U.S.C. section 1252A2B1. This relatively obscure statute makes certain types of judgments made by immigration judges and the Board of Immigration Appeals unreviewable in federal court. Specifically, section 1252A2B1 provides that, quote, notwithstanding any other provision of law, and regardless of whether the judgment, decision, or action is made in removal proceedings, no court shall have jurisdiction to review any judgment regarding the granting of relief under section 1182H, 1182I, 1229B, 1229C, or 1255 of this title. To understand this provision, it's important to first understand two key aspects of the statutory context. First, all of the sections cross-referenced in section 1252A2B1 are discretionary forms of relief. That is, whether to actually grant relief from removal to an immigrant under any of these sections is wholly up to the discretion of the Attorney General. However, each of these sections also defines a specific class of immigrants who are statutorily eligible for that discretionary relief. In other words, an immigrant seeking discretionary relief must proceed in two steps. At the first step, he must prove that he fits the statutory requirements for relief. But even if he proves that he meets all the statutory requirements, he's never entitled to relief. Instead, his petition simply proceeds to the second step, where, as courts frequently say, relief under these provisions is ultimately a matter of grace. Second, the jurisdictional limit in section 1252A2B1 is qualified by another provision, section 1252A2D, which provides that, quote, nothing in subparagraph B shall be construed as precluding review of constitutional claims or questions of law raised upon a petition for review filed with an appropriate court of appeals. So everyone agrees that constitutional claims and questions of law can be reviewed by the courts of appeals, even when they come up in the context of these discretionary forms of relief. The question raised in this case, then, is whether and when courts of appeals can review any factual decisions made by immigration judges or the BIA in the course of evaluating claims for discretionary relief. That might have all sounded like a jumble of subsections and cross-references, but considering how this all affects Mr. Patel, the petitioner before the court in this case, can help make more concrete sense of these provisions. Mr. Patel entered the United States illegally in the 1990s and lived here for decades with his wife and children. Eventually, though, the government initiated removal proceedings against Mr. Patel based on his illegal entry. Mr. Patel conceded that he had entered the country illegally, but sought adjustment of status under Section 1255, one of the discretionary forms of relief. The government argued, though, that Mr. Patel was not statutorily eligible for adjustment of status because he had checked a box on his driver's license application to the state of Georgia indicating that he was a United States citizen. By statute, an immigrant cannot be granted relief under Section 1255 if he has ever, quote, falsely represented himself to be a citizen of the United States for any purpose or benefit under state or federal law. Mr. Patel argued that he had just accidentally checked the wrong box on the form, and that there wasn't even any motive for him to claim to be a citizen on that application because he was eligible for a driver's license in Georgia either way, even though he wasn't a citizen. The immigration judge, though, disagreed and held that Mr. Patel had intentionally misrepresented his immigration status on the form, and so was not eligible for relief under Section 1255. Because of that, the immigration judge ordered Mr. Patel removed from the country, and the BIA affirmed that decision. Mr. Patel then tried to appeal that decision to the 11th Circuit, arguing that no reasonable judge could have looked at the evidence in his case and found him ineligible for relief under Section 1255. Rather than reaching the merits of that argument, though, the 11th Circuit held that it couldn't review his case because of Section 1252A2B1. The 11th Circuit found that because the immigration judge's decision was a judgment regarding the granting of relief under Section 1255, and because Mr. Patel's claim wasn't a constitutional claim or an issue of law, it lacked jurisdiction to hear the claim. Mr. Patel then sought cert from the Supreme Court, which granted review. Interestingly, the government throughout this process did not agree with the 11th Circuit's analysis. So the 11th Circuit's theory is that any factual questions bound up with claims for discretionary relief are unreviewable in court. In the government's view, though, the jurisdictional limit isn't quite that strict. The government argued, and some courts had held, that courts can review factual findings that are totally objective and just couldn't review those findings that were more discretionary. So, for example, the government's position was that courts could review a finding that an immigrant had been in the country for less than 10 years, because that's just an objective fact. But a court couldn't review a finding that an immigrant spouse wouldn't be exposed to extreme hardship if the immigrant were removed from the country, because deciding whether there would be extreme hardship has more of an element of judgment or discretion baked in. Mr. Patel argued for an even narrower reading of the jurisdictional limit, arguing that any findings that informed the statutory eligibility for relief could be reviewed by a court, and that it was only the second step, the decision about whether to actually grant relief to an immigrant who had been determined to be statutorily eligible for relief, that was unreviewable. Because neither of the parties supported the 11th Circuit's broader reading, the Supreme Court appointed an amicus, Taylor Meehan, to argue in support of the decision below. So with that background, let's look at what the court decided. Justice Barrett wrote the opinion for a 5-justice majority, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas, Alito, and Kavanaugh. The majority affirmed the 11th Circuit's decision in its entirety, siding with the court-appointed amicus, and concluded that when the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals declined to grant discretionary relief, federal courts cannot review any of the factual underpinnings of that decision. Instead, review is possible in such cases only when the immigrant raises legal or constitutional issues. The majority based its decision on what it saw as the plain text of the statute. First, the court emphasized the word any in the phrase any judgment, which it saw as a clear repudiation of the government's position. As the court explained, the word any indicates that judgment should be read expansively. Thus, contrary to the government's argument, there was no reason to believe that the word judgment was limited to judgments that require the exercise of at least some discretion. Instead, all judgments, including judgments about totally objective facts, fell within the jurisdictional limit. Second, the court considered the phrase regarding the granting of relief. Like the word any, the court concluded that the word regarding has a broadening effect. Thus, contrary to Mr. Patel's argument, the jurisdictional limit didn't apply just to the second step decision of whether to grant discretionary relief to an immigrant. It also applied to all judgments regarding that ultimate decision. On the majority's view, this means that first step judgments about whether the immigrant meets the statutory requirements to be eligible for relief also are swept in. Thus, the majority held, Mr. Patel could not raise his challenge to the immigration judge's factual findings in federal court. Justice Gorsuch wrote a dissent, which was joined by Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Like the majority, the dissent focused on the phrase, any judgment regarding the grant of relief. Unlike the majority, though, the dissent largely adopted Mr. Patel's reading of this phrase. As the dissent saw it, the majority's interpretation read the phrase, regarding the grant of relief, out of the statute altogether. Without that clause, after all, the statute would prohibit review of any judgment under Section 1255. On Justice Gorsuch's view, that would achieve exactly the same result that the majority reached, so the majority has a superfluity problem. To make the phrase regarding the grant of relief do any work in the statute, according to Justice Gorsuch, it must narrow the types of judgments that are addressed by Section 1252A2B1. Specifically, on this reading, only Step 2 decisions, deciding whether to grant relief to a statutorily eligible immigrant, would count as judgments regarding the grant of relief. The dissent found that this reading was also confirmed by the general presumption in favor of judicial review of executive action. So one big takeaway from this case is that immigrants who seek any of these forms of discretionary relief will have to frame their challenges to the immigration judges and board's decision as legal issues or constitutional claims rather than purely factual disputes when they head to federal court. Even before this decision, it often made strategic sense for an immigrant to frame his arguments that way whenever possible, because courts consider those types of claims de novo, which is much more favorable to immigrants than the deferential substantial evidence standard applied to findings of fact. And interestingly, while it was apparently undisputed in this case that the claim Mr. Patel brought to the 11th Circuit was a factual issue, a footnote in Justice Gorsuch's dissent highlights that it's not entirely clear that this same argument couldn't have been framed as a legal issue. After all, the question Mr. Patel posed to the 11th Circuit was whether any reasonable adjudicator could have made the factual findings the immigration judge made given the record before it. As Justice Gorsuch noted, the majority never explains why that question is something other than a question of law, and precedent suggests that whether there is substantial evidence to support a finding is in fact a question of law. So it's likely that this decision will lead to a lot of litigation about how exactly courts can draw the line between arguments that raise only factual challenges and thus are unreviewable, and those that have a sufficient legal hook to overcome Section 1252A2B1. The other big outstanding question is whether immigrants who affirmatively apply for discretionary relief, rather than raising discretionary relief during removal proceedings, are able to access judicial review at all after this decision. Section 1252A2B1, after all, applies regardless of whether the case is in removal proceedings or some other posture, so its jurisdictional bar applies either way. But the saving clause, Section 1252A2D, which allows immigrants to raise constitutional or legal claims, applies only in removal proceedings. So under the majority's reading of Section 1252A2B1, immigrants not in removal proceedings may not be able to raise constitutional or legal issues related to the denial of discretionary relief. The majority expressly declined to reach that issue, however, so it remains to be seen whether courts will allow such challenges moving forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.